Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions, either the ones that you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos, or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. If all has been going according to plan this weekend, then by the time you're watching this video on Sunday morning, I will have spoken at a skeptics conference in Wichita, Kansas, yesterday, on Saturday. And so I'm shooting this video a few days earlier in preparation for that. I've been doing a lot of prep work and various things and working on videos and my book and everything else as I've been talking about and getting everything ready for this weekend, which is why this last video, this last Thursday was just a short little PSA, is because I have been doing a lot of work. And by the way, that PSA took me almost a full day to put together. So sometimes the length of the video isn't necessarily a reflection of how much work goes into it. Anyway, I have some great questions to answer this week, so let's go ahead and get to it. Blue Dance Lily. I have heard of the horrible way Sea Org members are treated, the 16-hour days, yelled at by superiors, menial labor, etc. It seems those who blow out of Scientology are most often Sea Org members who are burnt out or tired of being mistreated. Why does the organization treat people this way? It seems that it's not advantageous to the church to create an atmosphere that makes people want to run away. Much of the church's bad publicity has been from Sea Org stories. If they wanted to alleviate this press issue, they'd treat the Sea Org members well so as to prevent people from wanting to leave. Is it just a desire to get free labor that spurs the church's top leadership to overwork the Sea Org members? Well, you know, if you're looking for sense and reason and logic, Scientology is not the place to go to look for that. It's a destructive cult. And a destructive cult has certain characteristics. And one of those is that the leader or leaders of the cult are there for their own personal aggrandizement, power, money, whatever it is that they want and seek, and that they take advantage of their followers in order to get it. They don't care about their followers. That's not why they're there. And I'm talking about the leaders because the leadership of Scientology is what sets the pace and tone for the rest of Scientology. The way that David Miscavige treats his juniors filters down, and that's how the rest of the Sea organization is treated. And there's just no question about that. It's, you know, Scientology is an alter ego of L. Ron Hubbard. David Miscavige is doing nothing but following in the footsteps of L. Ron Hubbard. He was trained by him. He emulates how L. Ron Hubbard acted. And there's just really no question or doubt about that. So what you're dealing with L. Ron Hubbard, and even more so with David Miscavige, is not people who are wholly thinking in sound logical principles in terms of how they would expand their organization and treat their people properly so as to create a flourishing, expansive, and happy scene. That's not what they're doing. And that's never been what it's about, you know. And also, you know, I don't know that destructive cults are the only place that you're going to see that kind of behavior in. I mean, you know, look at Walmart. Those employees, the people who work for Walmart, who number in the, you know, hundreds of thousands, as I understand it, are treated horribly. You know, they're paid like almost nothing. And meanwhile, the people at the top have literally billions of dollars. The family of the Walmart family have more money and power than they could ever spend in 100 lifetimes. So why do they treat their employees so badly? Because they're not good people. That's why. You know, you compare it with other organizations, other corporations who do pay a fair wage, do see that their employees get benefits, do see that their customers are well taken care of, and they do a good job. You know, they're expanding too. And yet, you know, the way they treat their employees hasn't stopped Walmart, you know, hasn't stopped people from going to Walmart, hasn't stopped people from spending their money at Walmart. So, you know, there's a bit of a lesson there too, you know. mistreating people and taking advantage of them does not necessarily end up in things falling apart on you. It's just human beings, I guess. So there is that lesson to be learned as well, or that, you know, to look at on that. But in terms of the Sea Org and that sort of thing, you get enough people who get a martyr complex going and feel like they kind of deserve to be treated that way because they aren't working hard enough, they aren't working long enough, they aren't getting enough done. And they just get into this frantic mindset where this is just life and normal sort of becomes redefined to being abused. And that's kind of what life is like in the Sea Org. And it's really important to understand that, you know, when we get back to Scientology and the Sea Organization and the destructive cult of it, it's not like life in the normal world. You know, I can talk about Walmart and abusive corporations and stuff, but those people have it easy compared to, you know, people in the Sea Org. It is a very abusive environment. And that you know, just kind of the way people are, that they can redefine normal and put up with that kind of stuff because they feel like they're doing it to save the world, you know, save the planet, that sort of thing. That's the martyrdom that Sea Org members live with and tell themselves that's what they're doing. They're not doing that, but that's what they tell themselves they're doing. And that's how they put up with that kind of abusive environment. And eventually, you just get fed up with it. You know, it becomes too much for almost anybody. And so people blow out and they leave. And so enough people have been doing that. It's been getting worse and worse and worse over the years with less and less return or personal satisfaction or, you know, that sort of thing, that people are just getting more sick of it with Scientology, and so they're leaving. So that's what's going on there. Holly Heron. Hi, Chris. With all the violence that David Miscavige seems to inflict with impunity, can't a few strong fellows who have had enough just physically carry him off and declare a new regime? Assign him to some RPF duties locked up in his own hole? You know, above and beyond what I just answered in the last question, this actually is a very interesting question. And I'm sure there's lots of deep answers to this in terms of psychological assessments that could be made of the people who do put up with abusive relationships or abusive leadership situations and don't fight back. You know, nobody in the Sea Org has a gun on them, but the analogy of being held prisoner, you know, under threat, is still a correct analogy. And the people who are directly subservient to David Miscavige have different psychological things going on. And I'm not even saying that I'm, like, you know, providing psychological analysis here. I'm just saying for myself what I think is going on there. And I think you have a couple things. One, David Miscavige has convinced a lot of people in Scientology, and probably including those people who are directly under him in the hole and at Int Base who work under him, I think he's got a lot of them convinced that he is Scientology. He's so important to Scientology. He's the one who keeps it going. He's the one who embodies, you know, not the principles and good nature of Scientology, but embodies the future survival of Scientology. And so, because he repeats that mantra all the time, you know, to them. And so I think that some of them have bought into that. And so they think that if they were to take out Miscavige, they'd be taking out Scientology. So they don't want to do that. You know, they might hate Miscavige. They might not like him personally, right? But they love Scientology, and they've convinced themselves that Scientology is saving the world and is the only way to save the world. And so they, again, they kind of put up with that sort of thing. But they dare not bring Miscavige down because that would bring Scientology down, and they can't have that, right? That could be one thing that's going on. Another thing that could be going on is straight up fear. You know, they're afraid of what would happen to them if they went after the big guy, right? And that's not so hard to understand. You know, look at hostage situations, look at prison situations, look at concentration camp situations where you have a great number of people being held prisoner or held hostage by one or two people. You know, you look at that and you go, well, logically speaking, those people could rush those one or two, terrorists or those one or two prison guards, and they could take them. And only a few people would suffer casualties or would be killed in the rush to take out those guards. But who's going to start it? Who's going to be the first guy? Who's going to stand up and say, I am Spartacus, right? And get that ball rolling. That's the tough call. That's the thing that never happens. People are not necessarily naturally, superhero courageous people. We've all heard stories of people who are. I mean, it's not like nobody is, but you get, these people who've been beaten down and beaten on for years, and they take on that role and they can't see themselves, rising up and taking over or taking charge or taking out, the abuser. It's just where their head's at. So there's also that kind of situation going on there too. Specifically, I'm talking about at international management, right? So where you might look at this from the safety and security of your home or wherever you're watching these videos or finding out about this stuff and might be thinking, well, I would never put up with that. It's very important to understand what's happening in Scientology or in any destructive cult to put yourself in their shoes. Because they're different shoes. They're not the same as you, the viewer, who's looking from outside the bubble world in and trying to understand what's going on. It's a whole different mindset in there. And when you can get that mindset and understand how that mindset's created, it's a little bit easier to understand how they put up with and deal with those kind of abuses. And by that, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not trying to make it sound like we should understand it so that we let it continue. We're speaking out. I speak out about these things to raise awareness on it so people outside the bubble world will do something to change it, because the people inside the bubble world are not necessarily going to. Not all of them. So anyway, it's a complex situation, but that's the best answer I can give you right now. Brent Davidson, given the amount of exposure in the media on Scientology's questionable practices, why are we not hearing about the U.S. government reevaluating the status of Scientology as a legitimate religion? Given the amount of information out there, I'm surprised this hasn't been given more political attention. One would think that enough evidence currently exists to launch a full investigation. Are we dealing with a passive population that is more interested in learning about this cult rather than acting in meaningful ways to reverse its path? I'm surprised that the power of social media and documentaries such as Going Clear have not created the call to action necessary to severely cripple the Scientology organization in the United States. I am astounded that this group is still able to continue purchasing properties at this pace without intervention. Well, to be totally honest with you, at this point, I'm a little astounded too. Yet, at the same time, if you're looking to the American public to rise up and deal with, injustice, social injustice, things like that, I think you're going to be waiting for a while, because, I think that you have a little bit of a point in your question where you say, are people more interested in simply watching this train wreck happen rather than, doing something about it? No, a lot of people are not interested in doing something about it. And I'm not singling anybody out here. I'm just saying in a general sense, it's, if it doesn't have anything to do with you directly, very few people are motivated to do something. Maybe they'll sign a petition. Maybe they'll write a letter. That would be, I suspect that a very small percentage of people who watch or, look into these kind of things actually take that next step to do something about it. And I would encourage anybody who's watching this to do write an email, write a letter, make a phone call, contact the government. I can have you. If not, please do so. Now, in terms of the broader picture of, with all the evidence out there, the Going Clear documentary and my videos, other people's videos, all the work that's been done by critics and whatnot, why has nobody in the government stepped up? It's a multi-layered answer. There's a lot to that answer, but I'll just give a couple brief things on that. One, Scientology is very small. In the bigger picture, the number of things that the United States government's dealing with, the number of things out there to handle, it's really not that big of a problem in the big picture. Okay. Two, given the size of the problem that it is, and the amount of tax money, for example, that the IRS could get out of the Church of Scientology if it were to revoke its tax-exempt status, they have to balance that against how much trouble would it be worth for them to take on the Church of Scientology. And the answer, unfortunately, is that it would be a lot of trouble for the IRS to take on the Church of Scientology, because the Church of Scientology is not afraid to go to court. They're not afraid to launch PR campaigns. They're not afraid to sue individual IRS members. All the things that the Church of Scientology did in the late 80s and early 90s to take on the IRS and put pressure on the IRS worked. You know, and I don't believe in conspiracies. I don't believe that the IRS commissioner was personally blackmailed. But I do believe that the Church of Scientology exerted a great deal of pressure on the IRS, and that was something the IRS wasn't used to dealing with or seeing or hearing. Who goes after the IRS? Well, Scientology did. And I don't know that that was the only reason that they got their tax-exempt status. I think there were a lot of other things going on there, too. For example, the Church of Scientology lying through their teeth to the IRS was also a factor in getting their tax-exempt status. I've seen the documents, and they are a pack of lies. Scientology told the IRS that they were in compliance with tax codes and that they were in compliance with all the things the IRS wanted them to do, and they're not. They're not even remotely, you know. It's a money-making scam. That's what Scientology is. It's not a religious movement. So they lied, and they got away with it. So, you know, for the IRS to have to invest all the money they'd have to invest and all the time and all the personnel to do that, it would not be a small job, and I think the IRS knows that. And the political pressure to make something like that happen simply doesn't exist. I know of a couple conversations that have happened with a couple of senators or representatives, congressmen, and there was noise, you know, there were some noises being made about, you know, doing something about it. But so far, there's been nothing in the public sector, nothing, you know, no press releases, no media attention on this in terms of Congress actually acting. And until they do and put enough pressure on the IRS, you know, you can publicly embarrass the IRS. Alex Gibney mentioned that, I think that he said that they were embarrassed about the fact that Scientology has tax-exempt status, but not embarrassed enough or pressured enough to take them on again and deal with that. So, you know, there's a lot there. And this also falls into, you know, why is it that the FBI or, you know, government agencies haven't stepped in with criminal investigations? Well, those investigations were launched, and they were shut down because Scientology won in court using the First Amendment to defend its right to stalk and harass and engage in human trafficking. And, you know, unfortunately, in the United States, religious institutions have a lot of leeway when it comes to actually taking the case to court and hauling out the First Amendment and saying, "But Your Honor, we were doing X and Y and Z because it's in our religious principles to do that." And because of separation of church and state and because of religious freedom in this country, which are good things, because of those principles, courts and certain judges are give a bit too much freedom to religions to practice their religion as they see fit. And if somebody goes into that religion and says, "Yes, I'm part of, you know, I'm going to be a Scientologist, and I'm going to agree to, you know, be human trafficked and I'm going to agree to give up these rights. And then later on, they come to their senses and go, holy cow, that was totally wrong of me to do that. The court goes, well, you agreed at one point, so that was religious freedom being exercised. So now I'm, you know, and they just get, it just gets a little bit zany. And underlying that is the fact that the courts don't fully recognize and understand the concept of undue influence when it comes to destructive cults and, frankly, brainwashing, you know, or what I'm using instead, undue influence, which is a technical term, it's a business term, and it's used in a business sense, but they don't quite really have precedent and they don't really have it fully understood in courtrooms yet, the psychological aspects of that and how somebody could be part of a religion because they were put under undue influence and so, you know, are now speaking out about it because they got out of that. You know, they don't quite have that concept yet. So these two things go hand in hand, which is why I'm talking about it. You know, on the courts on one side, the politicians and the IRS on the other, both of these things, you know, have, there's lots of distractions, there's lots of noise, there's lots of other things for these guys to be working on. And so Scientology kind of takes a back seat, while us who know about Scientology or have been part of it know that it does not deserve the tax-exempt status or the protection of the First Amendment. We got to wait for the rest of society to, you know, or the government rather, and the courts to kind of catch up on that. So that's how I see it. Mark LaClasse 1. Hi Chris, great videos and thank you for speaking out. I have a question in relation with the suicide of Jim Carrey's ex-girlfriend. Is it possible that a Scientologist would consider suicide as a way to get rid of his, her troubles in the present life? Based on the fact that Scientologists believe in reincarnation, could it be that the person might think that he, she will come back in another life and have a clean slate? Bluntly, no. Scientologists do not believe in reincarnation in that you'll have a clean slate when you come back around. They believe that you carry the trauma and wrongdoings of this life into your next life. So it would be against Scientologist principles to commit suicide because that would not be you know, an accepted moral way out. And it would be irresponsible, you know, from a Scientology point of view I'm talking about now. I'm not, I don't have any judgment on people who commit suicide, and I'm not, you know, saying personally that I am in some position where I'm judging them. I'm talking about from a Scientology point of view. They do judge people who commit suicide, and they absolutely would judge them in such a way as to say that they were being irresponsible and that they took the coward's way out and that sort of thing. Rather than face up to their responsibilities and deal with them and handle their life. So from that point of view, suicide would be wrong, and Scientologists would not approve of that or think that that would be an acceptable way to deal with their problems. Rasha Seiden. Hi, Seashell. I have a more personal question, which is more a comparison of perspectives. Having had the Scientology-centric indoctrination of what your purpose in life was supposed to be, namely, whatever benefits Scientology, and then becoming free of those mental and emotional manacles, does pursuing or contemplating the real possibilities for discovering a meaning to life take on new meaning to you? Have other areas of life, like getting up in the morning or enjoying a nice meal or a drink with friends, become more satisfying and rewarding? Please keep up the awesome videos. The information and insight is invaluable. Yeah, absolutely. Pursuing my own purposes and new activities and fun activities in life definitely is way more enjoyable now that I'm out of the Sea Org mindset and have shed a lot of the Scientology nonsense out of my way of thinking. You know, in fact, it was only a couple months ago when it first hit me that I was at a party, I was at a barbecue, and I was just sitting there with a drink and talking with my friends and looking around, and it suddenly hit me that what was not there was this frantic, urgent idea that I was that I should be doing something else because I was wasting my time sitting around doing nothing. That was a big deal when that kind of hit me, that it was gone, you know, that I didn't have that sort of franticness in my head, because it took, you know, months and months, over a year, for that to start coming out of my head after I left the Scientology and the Sea organization behind me, because they just pound it into you, man. You know, it's your life is that every second of every day, you've got to be producing something, you know, and if you're not, if you're slacking, and you know, you're being lackadaisical, you hear about it, you know, you definitely hear about it. There it is, like, let's go, you know, taka taka taka, as they used to say. So so all that's kind of gone now, and I'm pursuing my purposes. You know, I'm helping. I'm by doing my YouTube channel and the writing and stuff that I do. I'm helping people that way, and it's much more satisfying, much more rewarding. And I'm also enjoying life. You know, I just go out, I take walks, I go to the movies, I take drives, I have friends, I have, you know, of course I'm in much better tune with my family now, and life's way more enjoyable, way more. It's not even, it's so apples and oranges, it's not even like remotely the same as it used to be. So thanks for asking. Zach Sawyer. From your experience as a Sea Org member, are there different challenges working in churches in Middle America compared to, let's say, Los Angeles? Do you face more religious bigotry in these areas? Are there any pressure groups from other religions or people from the extreme right that give the church problems in these areas? I'm asking this because, being from the South, I had no idea what Scientology was until I watched your videos. The only thing I knew or associated with the church was that they worshipped aliens. Or at least that was what I was told until I did my own research. Well, no, I don't think that Scientology in the Bible Belt is particularly large enough to really threaten anybody else in any other churches, or create a situation where other churches feel like they need to do something about the Scientology problem in their area. Scientology does exist in the South. There's a church in Atlanta, there's one in New Orleans in Louisiana, there's one in Austin and Dallas and some other places, you know, and of course in Florida, they're huge in Florida, but you don't really see other church groups or other civics groups really getting too much up in arms about Scientology. They probably should. But they don't, because Scientology is so insignificant in their area. I mean, they're really these outer churches, what I call the local orgs, are so tiny. They are almost, you know, they're barely keeping their doors open. And I think now more than ever, that's probably truer than it has been in the past. So no, you don't really see a lot of pressure against them or you know, people rising up to do something about them. Spike Robinson. Hi, Chris. It was great to meet you at the Toronto conference. My question is one I asked you at the conference. At the time, we were in a joking mood, and so it was taken as the compliment it was meant to be, but not really answered as we moved on to other subjects. But now I'm going to put you on the spot because I think it's an interesting and critical issue. Why is it, do you think, that some people can awake and recover quickly and embrace rationality like you, while others take many years to free themselves from the thought control trap? And why do some people never open their eyes? I think the answer to this is really as varied as there are people, because I think that people dealing with their past traumas and experiences in a destructive cult like Scientology have different layers or levels of indoctrination, different experiences with it, and they went into it with different ideas as to what they were going to get out of it, different expectations, different levels of commitment. And so when they come out of it, they have to, you know, they have however many layers of stuff built up that they're going to have to deal with, and different levels of ability to deal with it. And I don't mean to say that people, you know, can't deal with it or that there's something wrong with them. I mean that different people have different levels of ability to confront and handle stuff. It's just kind of true. I mean, different people deal with stress in different ways, and not everybody gets over it or manages it. I think that some people could use psychological help. By that I mean professional help, like they could go see a psychologist or see a counselor or get some therapy of some kind, and they don't. Of course, with all of the, not hard to understand, given that Scientology indoctrinates people so heavily against psychiatry. I think also another factor is that it takes a proactive approach to recover from being in a cult. And not everybody is really up to being proactive about their recovery. They don't feel it's necessary. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to get into it for whatever reason. It just kind of sits there, and it just doesn't really ever go away. I think from my own experience, which is all I can talk to about with this, it has taken a lot of work on my part, a lot of reading, a lot of study, a lot of talking to people, and of course, all the work I've done in talking about it has helped my own recovery, which is why I so heavily encourage people to do it for themselves, whether they write or make videos or talk about it or do whatever to get it flushed out of their system, stop using the terminology, all those things that I've talked and written about before. So I think to the degree that people don't do those things or don't take a proactive approach to it for whatever reason, it hinders them. And then, of course, you have some people who come out of Scientology and are absolutely convinced that it really helped them and it was really a good thing, and they credit Scientology with that help that they got. And they shouldn't do that, but they do. Just my take on it, I think that there are things in Scientology that do help people. I'm not saying that people weren't helped. I'm saying that they credit Scientology and they credit L. Ron Hubbard for that help. And they shouldn't. Because Hubbard was a plagiarist and a liar. And he ripped off other forms of therapy will-nil. I mean, he just ripped it off. And that is the actual source of whatever help they got. But they keep crediting Scientology with it. And if you do that, you're never going to get out of the Scientology mindset. And it is a mindset. There is indoctrination. There is undue influence. There is brainwashing. It does go on. It's a very real thing. And some people don't want to deal with that. They don't want to face that because maybe they think that their gains are going to be invalidated or something, or that they're going to think that they can't keep having those kind of gains or something if they stop crediting Scientology with it. I don't know. I really don't know. Like I said, I think it's individual for each person. So I can only talk about it from my own experience, which is limited, to myself and what I've gone through and how I've come out of it and what I have directly observed in other people. And I haven't observed lots and lots and lots of people, and I haven't done any scientific studies on it or anything like that. So, this question asks for my own opinion about it, and so that's all I can really give. So, my best advice to anybody who's recovering from Scientology or any other destructive cult is be proactive. You have to do things proactively, energetically, and work on it in order to recover. And whatever that means to, each individual person, that's what will get them through the process of recovering. Okay, and so we've come to the end of another episode. I hope that these questions and answers were helpful and interesting to you. And I'm really hoping that this Wichita Skeptics Conference goes well, and that I get a good recording of my talk on it. I hope my talk goes well. and so I'll have something to show you guys on that in this next week. And in the meantime, I'm going to carry on with my other projects and get them done as quickly as I can so that I can get them out to you guys. So thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you next week.